Computers, smartphones, tablets, and other technology, of course, a part of your life, I bet, and a part of mine for sure. Just everybody, probably everyone or nearly everybody on your holiday gift list uses technology in some way. We're going to get some good technical gift ideas from Peter Green. Pete has lots of great suggestions about what to look for when doing your holiday shopping. And, of course, he can always answer your computer questions when you phone in at 1-800-642-1234. Or you email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page, title, The Larry Mueller Show. And, Pete, welcome back.
Always great, Larry.
Really appreciate having you with us today. I know a lot of people are buying tech gifts this year for family and friends. Are there some tips that you have to kind of consider before making final decisions?
Well, you know, most of the things to look for if you want to stay wireless is Bluetooth. You know, that's pretty popular. People mm-hmm. buying speakers and sound bars for their TV. Those are typically wired to HDMI, you know, interfaces. I know I had a Bluetooth sound box or boom box, if you want to call it, made by Logitech, and it failed after, I don't know, maybe within two year warranty period. So I called them up and wanted to, you know, swap it out and get a replacement. And like, oh, we don't make that anymore, but we make this one or that one.
Yeah.
You know, the size difference went like probably, you know, 1/10 of the size, but the sound was pretty comparable. So a lot of those inexpensive speakers for smartphones are pretty impressive. You know, some of the other gadgets that people are buying, combination wireless mouse and keyboard, getting rid of the wires. Sometimes in a work environment, people still like being wired. It's just more consistent.
Yeah.
They don't like the interruption when the battery gets weak or, you know, yeah, fails and you got to change the battery. They just like being on all the time. With, you know, smartphones now, I'm actually looking at acquiring a drone. So there are a wide variety of drone devices out there. Some that interface with a smartphone, some that don't. In the range, the flying range of those devices varies greatly. The battery life varies greatly. I've noticed on eBay some of the sellers actually sell packages with multiple battery packs because, you know, you think, well, I'm going to fly this thing. How long can you fly it for? If you were to guess, you know, an inexpensive drone, let's say in the $50 to $75 range, how long and far do you think you could typically fly something like that?
Yeah, no idea. Maybe a half hour?
Let's say, you know, maybe 100, 200 feet, maybe six minutes.
Oh!
So,
and then you got to replace the batteries?
Yeah, yep.
Oh.
And then some of them have a feature where if you kind of feel like you've lost control of it, you can hit a button in it, and it's like a retrieve mode.
So, that's a good idea.
But not all of them have things like that. So, you know, like I said, I'm in the research phase of, you know, trying to figure out that kind of gadget. And, you know, interfacing with a smartphone so that you have the video in front of you, because not all of them have cameras. And then the cameras, as far as the megapixel, varies. Mm-hmm. Some of them actually have their own storage and others don't. So, you know, those are kind of fun things. And they always say, make sure you have clearance of the airspace, because that is working on being well-regulated for those devices, because some people have gotten in some pretty serious trouble being running interference.
So what about, so we've got that, what about some of the other items that we might, turn up as gifts?
Second monitor, mm-hmm. You know, and with more recent computers, and we've mentioned this before in other shows, more recent computers might have, you know, a second, you know, port for plugging in a monitor. So if you do a little bit of homework and look behind that computer system of the friend or relative family member that you're looking to do that for, or your own system, you know, looking for, there's a VGA port, which is typically, got pins sticking out of it. And then there's another port that looks like it's got a bunch of vertical lines in it. That's another monitor port. So if you've got one of those open, there's a good chance you might be able to, you know, add a second monitor. But you have to look on the monitor specifications to make sure that you have both those as options.
Oh, so, yeah, sure.
And that's usually called, I believe, a D-sub connector. It's kind of like in the shape of a D, a long D, the one that's got the vertical lines in it.
Well, we have callers online with questions for you. You may have a question about a holiday gift, or maybe you've got an issue with your computer. Join in, 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Kate in Elm Grove up first. Kate, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Larry. How you doing?
Great. Appreciate the call. What have you got good. For us?
I have a question on password-safe software, S-A-F-E, safe.
Okay.
Like you can put all your passwords in and you only have to remember the password for the password safe. Mm-hmm.
So in terms of using them?
Yeah.
I've used them in the past. We've had shows where I've talked about this, and what I typically recommend is that you have in your password stable probably 3 to 5 keywords that you would use. Some people like phrases or using the, you know, first letter of each word in a phrase. But, you know, having 3 to 5 of those in your stable and then a modification of the numbers and symbols that you would use.
Yeah, we're doing that already.
Yeah. So it makes it more easier for you to remember. And I actually use my phone as my communication center and put that information in my phone so I have it with me. So when I travel, you know, that comes in pretty handy if you're messing up when you're trying to log into a, you know, a secure site, and they're like, hey, I don't recognize your device. What's your, you know, got to know your password. And, you know, when you get out of a routine, sometimes you typically forget those passwords that you've been using on a regular basis.
But you don't like password-safe software, huh?
Personally, I do not use software to keep track of my passwords.
Okay. Yep. If you did, would you have a recommendation?
I would probably look on a resource like CNET, CNET.com, and they review hardware and software, and I would look at, you know, password, what would you call it, password software, and, you know, see what comes up, and if it's a good hit and they have some reviews, I would probably take a serious look at their recommendations.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks much.
Yeah, yep. Thanks, Kate, for calling.
You know, Larry, I want to mention another thing that a lot of people may not realize. They talk about TV, the HD TVs being smart TVs, and that basically means the ability to hook up to the internet. Some are hardwired, and some you do wireless. But you can also get TVs that are not smart TVs, and you can get, like, you know, a Google device to plug in. You just have to have, you know, a port available. Mm-hmm. Typically, it's an HDMI port. So, you know, an inexpensive TV, you know, Walmart and Target and Menards and a lot of these other retailers sell some of these non-smart TVs, and you can still make them smart, but you just have to be aware that, you know, you're going to plug into an HDMI port, and you're going to either purchase, like, a Google product, or Amazon's got a product, Apple TV. So those all can plug into them. And then the other thing is there are some devices out there that actually allow you to make your smartphone appear on your TV. So if you wanted to show pictures and videos, you know, there are devices out there that'll help you do that as well.
That'd be kind of a cool Christmas or holiday gift as well.
Yeah.
Very, very good. Michael in Appleton, thanks for calling. Hi.
Sure. Good morning. Phones for drones makes me feel like some sort of Neanderthal. But anyway, the reason I'm calling, the Christmas present is maybe a laptop. And for me, and I want to know how much memory I should have on it, understanding that all I do is email or check Facebook, mm-hmm. maybe stream a TV show or play a DVD, and that's about it. Nothing fancy. So what do I need?
That's a great question. I would say, you know, if you're looking at staying current and you get a laptop that's probably going to say Windows 10 ready, and it might come with Windows 8.1, and Windows 10 is a free download, or Windows 7, you're going to want to get the 64-bit version of the operating system, because that is the one that supports anything 4 gigs and above. The limit,
okay.
The 32-bit is a limit of 4 gigs. So,
okay.
And then how much memory you want? Well, memory-wise, I would probably recommend in the neighborhood of at least 8 for a laptop, and if it supports more, better. Memory has still stayed down in price, which is awesome. So in a desktop environment, I'd be telling people to start at 16 gigabytes of memory for RAM. Hard drive space, a lot of them are probably now in the 750 gig range is probably a good minimum to be at. And
okay.
In terms of what you want to do, that's, you know, it's way more than enough. But the thing is, that's kind of where the hardware is. But I believe the industry still has a pretty good surplus of a lot of models that they've produced in the last couple of years with, you know, lower performance CPUs and memory configurations. So you'll still see systems out there that are probably, you know, 4 gigs of memory running, you know, whatever version of Windows. Like I said, make sure, you know, see if it's expandable. Look for the 64-bit version. And, you know, you might find some of these in the price range of on, you know, like a Black Friday special, which has already passed, but, you know, they still throw that term out there. You might find them for $175 to $300, and, you know, they're pretty sweet, you know, deals. So
that would be. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too. We have open lines for you at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Speaking of laptops, I had an email from Sarah. So I have a brand new laptop. I want to keep it in good shape for a long time. What should I do to keep it from getting viruses and from slowing down?
Great question. A program like Malwarebytes is a good program to take a look at and download, install in your system. You can look at AVG or AVAS. Those are also ones that provide free versions. Had pretty good luck with those over the years. And then another program to look at is CCleaner, to just do, you know, good maintenance work on it in terms of, you know, cleaning up your system registry over time and, you know, getting rid of a lot of temporary files, which typically slow down the computer over use.
And Brian wonders about what you could tell him about Mohu Leaf, M-O-H-U Leaf.
How do you spell that again?
M-O-H-U Leaf.
Hmm.
I don't know that. What is it and how? Well, we'll have to do a little research on that when we have a little break here. And speaking of breaks, I just to remind you, talking computers and computer issues today with Peter Green. Pete is a computer consultant with Infostar.com, talks with us regularly about how to help with your personal computer problems. I'm Larry Mueller, and Cheyenne Lentz is our producer and on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Coming up at 2 o'clock, there's more awareness than ever these days about the dangers of playing football. But how much a person knows about the game's risks often depends on their economic status. Kathleen Dunn talks about that with her guest today, talking about economic and racial factors that come into play. That's at 2 o'clock. Right now, taking a look at your computer and software with Peter Green of Infostar.com. Join in with your questions or comments, 800-642-1234. Greg in Milwaukee has a question, so let's go there. Hi, Greg. Thank you for calling.
Hi, how you doing?
Great. Appreciate the call.
Thank you. I've been on a couple of times, and always get a good answer. This time I tried to load El Capitan on my MacBook Pro, and for some reason now, I'm not even able to start up my computer. I've even tried disconnecting the battery and running it straight off the power cord, and I don't know if I just fried it somehow or what I may have done.
I have had something like that happen with running an Apple upgrade, and you're going to have to do some search, you know, research on that online to see, you know, how to deal with it. I know it took me a number of hours to actually fix the problem by doing the upgrade. And I know the article I eventually found said 200, it was like 250,000 users were affected that Apple did not want to acknowledge actually had a problem. So it could be coincidental. I mean, you can't rule that out, that, you know, something just happened to your hardware, but more than likely not. So that's why I would say I would do the research on it and see. The other thing that if you don't want to spend a lot of time on it, if, you know, in, I don't know where you're located, but in Madison they have an Apple store. You could probably bring it into them and have them, you know, take a look at it and do an assessment and, you know, go from there. So
I live in Wauwatosa, so I can just stop at the Apple store in Mayfair then.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm just putting that out there as an option, but I'm not ruling it out. You know,
right.
you like to think it's maybe coincidental and something really did happen to my computer, but the flip side of it is I've been there where I've had devices from Apple, you know, like I've talked about this a long time ago, where my iPhone got bricked and it was an Apple update, you know, and it basically you couldn't use it. So I had to start over again. So,
all right.
Thanks, Greg. Appreciate the call.
You know,
and go ahead.
As related to that update, I have a number of systems that I deal with in terms of that can take that update. And my daughter is also a graphic design person and works pretty exclusively on Macs. In other words, she really is in that environment. And I remember when she applied an update and she lost certain features to her computer as related to that update. So just because an update is put out there doesn't mean you should apply it. But if it looks like there are features that you can take advantage of, you know, in terms of applying that update, then by all means, definitely explore it, you know, and do it. But I'm just saying sometimes, you know, like this latest one, I'm taking a little bit of a step back and waiting.
Yeah.
Because I believe there have been one or two fixes to it. So I don't want to be ahead of the curve on that. So I'm just putting that out there in terms of sometimes it makes sense to wait. But if there are definitely features you can take advantage of, then it's a good reason
to push forward. Jay and Two Rivers, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you. I cannot access my internet browser. It comes up with "this web page is not found." Now I'm using Google Chrome, but if I go over to Internet Explorer and bring up Google, I can't access the site from there either.
It's what version of what operating system or computer are you using?
Windows 10 64-bit.
Windows 10. How long have you been using Windows 10?
Oh, for about a year and a half.
Okay. I don't know if it's been... Have you been part of, like, the test version?
Yeah.
Aside from that, there's a feature...
Well, Windows 10.1.
Yeah. So it sounds to me like something happened with your internet settings, you know, you're set up to access the internet.
Right.
Has it been going on for, like, a number of days or a week?
Just the last couple of days.
Yeah. What you may want to do is you'll have to explore how to access in Windows 10, but you can do a system restore. So if you can find your control panel or if you can go to find your accessories and system tools, You can do a system restore and pick a date that probably, you know, prior to when you first experienced the problem, and it'll put back your settings the way they were when they were working. There must have been something that you either inadvertently changed, or if you're accessing it through a router, is your, you know, your router still on and working? You know, if you're using a cable modem, is your...
Cable modem.
Yeah. The other option is, you know, the service provider that you're using. These are things that they can help you, you know, talk you through with their tech support. So this might be a good opportunity for you to, you know, say hi to your internet service provider and ask them for some assistance to get you back online.
I have done a reset to, I forgot how I got there.
Mm-hmm.
XP was so easy to use, and I'm still...
Yeah, they've added a few more layers to Windows 10 in terms of how to do certain things.
So
they felt it was necessary to do that. I don't know why, but they felt it was necessary.
Do I access that through the control panel?
You could probably do it through programs and, you know, system tools and system restore is in system tools. That's under accessories, or it used to be, but also in the control panel. It used to be you could right mouse click on your computer and then go to properties and then system restore, system protection and system restore were together. But I think calling your internet service provider because, you know, the other thing is when I used to live in an area where I was serviced by Charter, if my internet went out, Charter would say, well, we need to hear from two other people other than yourself and your area to prove that the internet really isn't working. So, you know, when your internet goes out or if you're not able to access it on your computer, it's a good idea to talk to your internet service provider and see what's up in your area because they do periodically experience outages. Same thing with AT&T and even cell phone services. You know, you never know when something's been cut, something's been crashed into that's affecting your area. And unless you go out and about and start talking to people or, you know, making phone calls to people that you know that are using the same thing that you are, you're really in the dark as far as what's going on.
It was a funny story last. It wasn't very funny last night, but I had the television on, and suddenly I lost the screen, and I couldn't get back on to the screen.
And you thought you sat on your remote or something and shut it off?
Well, I called DirecTV, and I talked for like an hour on the phone to them, and the guy says, you know what, I can't figure this out. I wonder, what's your brand of television? And I said, it's a Sony Smart. You know, he said, maybe you should call Sony. So I actually went online to Sony and noticed that there were several videos that you could look at. And there were questions like this problem. If this problem it develops, go to this video.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. I found, okay, that sounds about like what I've got. I went to that, and there was about a 3-minute video
that
I wish I'd have gone to right away. And it very easily explained, and I had it fixed in about a minute after watching the video.
But in this case, he can't go online.
No, I
know. And my point is there are so many variables involved and even variables in dealing with internet service providers based on experience that, you know, it's not such a bad idea to pick up the phone and call them and you know, what kind of assistance you can get from them because they've got people that are using Windows 10. And they're going to, you know, tell you, do this, this, and this, and tell me what's going on. And then they're like, oh, that's not right. You need to have this. And then they'll make the change, and then you'll be all set.
Yep.
Or, like I said, you could be in an area which the service is actually down, or their equipment that they've given you on loan, you know, is malfunctioning, because they can ping those devices and see if they're actually online to their system. So there's a lot of upside to actually calling and getting some advice from them.
Jay, thanks again. Sheila in Portage up next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Ever since I changed my email address. I have been getting driver update screens in the, that just come up automatically, and they say that my drivers need to be upgraded, and then it says you need to register, and then you need to pay.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that I had my computer set to automatically update drivers through Microsoft.
So this is a third party that's asking you for this?
Yeah.
Yeah. What you should probably do is see if you can, and I don't think I would do it on the computer that you have, but see if you can download a copy of something like Malwarebytes and install it on your computer with it being not hooked up to the internet. And then and then run it and see if it can get rid of that program that's asking you for driver updates.
Oh, okay. Because I have Windows 7
mm-hmm.
on this desktop.
Yep.
And I really thought that it was automatically set up, you know, from day one to update drivers.
Yeah, that's for through Windows, but it sounds like somehow either you or if there's anyone else that's using that computer inadvertently acknowledged something which is now on your system that's saying, hey, we're going to update the drivers for you, and by the way,
you don't want that.
Yeah.
No, you know, I'm always suspicious when they say you have to pay.
Mm-hmm. So
there you go.
What you should do is click on the start bar and right mouse click on your computer and look at the properties and make sure you know which version of Windows and whether it's 32-bit or 64-bit.
It's 64.
Okay, so when you download, you know, a program like Malwarebytes, you're downloading the right version to install in your system.
Mm-hmm. Good luck.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yep, you're welcome.
And Ken in Conover, it's your turn. Hi, Ken.
Good morning. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question. Is there out there an inexpensive or better yet a free publishing software that would allow one to do simple note cards but install photos on the front of the note cards?
Oh, I'm sure there's...
Oh, yeah, there's got to be.
Like I mentioned before, a good website for stuff like that, cnet.com, would have probably a whole slew of programs that does stuff like that.
Well...
Do you have Microsoft Office by any chance?
Well, if I had Microsoft Office, I would have the publisher there, but I don't, and I don't want to put $129 into it just for a couple of notes.
Yep.
Yeah.
I have been on CNET, and they've talked about downloading Serif or Scribus or some of those, and I did that, but they don't allow you to do just a simple note card. They always are doing text documents rather than a simple note card.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You could probably, you know, use Google Docs for something like that. You know, Google has a bunch of free software online.
I bet.
And I'm sure you can just, you know, pick the format that you need, and they have, you know, picture software that you can use as well.
Yeah.
So I would not be surprised. I'd be shocked if you couldn't do what you wanted with it.
Yeah, and that can't be that hard.
You just have to format the size of the page that you want.
Yeah, just yesterday I was at Walgreens with a photo and got it loaded up to a card with some holiday greetings on it and took seconds.
Yeah.
And came back an hour later and there's, you know, 100.
It's all done.
100, and looking really quite nice.
Yeah, it's great.
From a smartphone, you know. So.
You know, one of the things that I like doing that's, I think, a great gift is you can take a program like Photoshop or a similar program, and you basically have to create the size of the page that you want. So places like FedEx, Kinko's, and some of the Staples, Office Max, Office Depot, that output pictures or documents for you, you can create a poster size collage of pictures. Because think about how many pictures we take using our smartphones and maybe our cameras. I Larry, yeah, to be honest with you, my phone is with me, and it's the camera that I use on the phone. I don't use, no reason to get a camera. They're like, what, 8, 12, 15 megapixel pictures, so they're awesome. Is downloading those pictures to create a memory, because there's so many times that we don't even print those pictures anymore.
Yeah.
But to give somebody a gift of a collage, you know, I think is an awesome way to, you know, save the memories, and also it's a great gift.
Let's see if we have an email, a Facebook question from Rich. It says, I recently updated to Windows 10. I'm using PC-Matic for antivirus versus Windows 10 default, but I can't get rid of the annoying Windows Defender is turned off pop-up. Is there any way to disable this pop-up?
I'm trying to remember. There is a way to disable virtually anything in Windows. You have to... I believe it's... I'm trying. I haven't done it in a while. But there is a... you could probably go on and do a Google search for... disabling Windows Defender through admin, A-D-M-I-N. And basically there are these switches that Windows has where it's either an automatic feature, or you can stop it, or you can restart it, or you can pause it. And it's been available for so long, you can go out there and probably find tutorials on it where it shows you step by step, you know, where those things are. And one of them is to actually just disable Windows Defender. So you'll essentially shut it off and it will not be enabled to be turned on. And then what you'll end up getting is a message from Windows which will tell you that, you know, it's been disabled and making sure you're okay with it.
We have a Facebook question from Adam. My sister's looking into the LeapFrog devices for her kids. Any insights or suggestions for the LeapFrog devices? And here again is one I don't really know about.
I have not heard of LeapFrog devices.
All right, that's one. We'll just hold it then, and we'll take a look at it in a little bit. So,
well, the Mohu Leaf thing that you mentioned earlier, that
I was just going to come back to that.
Yeah, from what I found out there is, it's basically a TV antenna, you know, a flat style TV antenna, and it looks like you know, in terms of reviews and people using it, they like it. So I don't know if there's anything else to that, but...
Okay, so it's an antenna, and the reviews are pretty good for it.
Yeah.
And we're looking at another question here from Eric. What do you think about Amazon's Echo?
You know, I was very intrigued, and almost I came really close to buying it. And I have to
what
say...
What is it?
And I have to say, you know, we get the Echo or get a drone, you know, it's like a toss up.
Oh.
It's an internet enabled device that you can have in your home, and you can interact with it where, you know, if you want the weather, you want the news, you want music, you know, you can use it to basically learn your lifestyle and, you know, assist with, you know, instead of having your phone or tablet in your hand, it'll tell you things. So it's, I believe, in its first generation, and it's been very well received. It's, I believe, priced somewhere in the neighborhood of around $129, plus or minus. And it's in a cylinder style. So it's not like a cube or a rectangle. It's in a cylinder style. And you just, you know, place it in a room, and it, you talk to it, and it, you know.
So it's like a Siri?
Kind of, yeah.
You say.
But that's its main focus. It doesn't do, you know, stuff that your phone does.
Yeah.
Because there's no visual on it. It's all audible. It's all audio.
But it'll contain information, like you could even say, what's 100 times 48 sure. or something, and it'll give mm-hmm. you an answer.
Yeah, that you know that's easy for it. But it's to you know be interactive with you, and you know so you know if you're trying to make a plan and you're having a talk and with the family and you just you know ask it a question to see if it can help you know move the discussion along, see who's right and who's wrong.
That's great. 1-800-642-1234. We'll get you on fairly quickly here. Would you suggest, Robert wonders if you'd suggest an app for an iPad that will clear junk files and clear caches?
I run Apple's, you know, yeah. You do that in settings and then you can... It's
you
built
just go
in.
To it's settings. Built it's built in. You don't really need it.
Yeah, you don't really need an app to do that.
Because it's already there.
I mean, I haven't explored that because I've always used Apple's version of how to you know clean up the cache and so forth.
Facebook comment from Catherine, and this is for the listener looking for a good password app.
Mm-hmm.
Catherine recommends Data Vault, says it works very well and had great reviews when she was looking for it a few years ago. I have it on my Android phone, iPad, and desktop computer. It can be synchronized between all the platforms. It's a separate purchase for each, but it's supposed to be very secure, and I like the interface. So again, it's called, so she has it all one word, Data Vault, as one that she has certainly had good luck with.
I think I've heard that. It's been around for a while. It's not a new program.
Yeah, and Sue and Nina is looking to buy a new laptop and wonders in the laptop area what you're recommending.
For laptops? Like mentioned earlier, in terms of memory, you know, with a Windows 10-based system, I'd start at least 8 gigs of memory. And like I said, with desktop, recommending 16. Screen-wise, you know, 15 is usually a good size unless you need something smaller, a little bit lighter. And those are typically less like a DVD drive. To some people, DVD drives are still important. You know, that's a feature to look for. It saves weight. It saves on size and thickness when it doesn't include it. But it's not very expensive to add it externally. Those can be had for, you know, $25 to $40 to add on an external DVD drive that plugs in with a USB cable. In fact, I bought a bunch of desktops without a DVD drive and just used the external drive whenever I needed it, which was pretty rare.
Yeah.
And then as far as video, you know, if you buy a laptop and it has shared video, that typically means that the memory that's in your system is being shared for both the video performance and the laptop performance. That's where the price goes up when you have a separate video card or a separate video processor that's dedicated for that. And then hard drive, you know, probably starting at 750 gigabytes of storage. The processor, you know, again, that's the engine of the computer, the CPU. And in terms of AMD and Intel, both of them work well. The performance comes into play in terms of how many core processors they have. And typically you start seeing things get a little pricey with Intel when you go above like an i5 or higher. And then with AMD, I believe, I'm not quite sure what they're using for their laptops, but I use, there's a CPU benchmark chart, and I've linked to it off of my TechLinks page, and you can just do a search for CPU benchmarks. And it will tell you when you look at a computer and it states what CPU it's using, is just take that information and plug it and look at the chart,
mm-hmm.
and you can see where it fits in terms of performance. So there's a wide, there's so many processors out there, Larry. It's pretty crazy. But it's nice to know where yours would fit. And when I look at desktop performance, I weigh You know, what's the price for me to bump it up a notch?
Yeah.
Is it really worth an extra $100 or $150 to get maybe 5% more in performance? Am I better off putting that money somewhere else?
Peter Green of Infostar.com. Our guest, I'm Larry Mueller, talking computers here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller, and my guest, Peter Green, computer consultant with Infostar.com, visits with us pretty often to help with your personal computer problems. Our lines are all filled, so let's go to Dottie in Sister Bay. Hi, Dottie. Thank you for calling.
Hello, Larry. Thank you for taking my call. My question is about Windows Defender, as I heard you talking about it.
Right.
When I bought my laptop, I was going to install Microsoft Essentials, mm-hmm. like I have on my lap on my desktop.
Right.
And they said I didn't need to do that. I had Windows Defender, and that was adequate.
Mm-hmm.
Is it?
I would add something else, personally.
Well, when you try to add something, they say you have to shut off Windows Defender, I think.
Yeah, you can shut it off, but what you do is you down the way to do it so that you don't have interference with Windows Defender is you find the software that you want to use, so an antivirus program, anti-malware program like Malwarebytes or Avast or AVG. You go to their website, you download the software that's for your system, and then you disconnect. I mean, the easier way is to disconnect from the internet and then disable your Windows Defender and then reboot your machine, and then you can install the software that you downloaded.
Okay.
If you go through the process by still being connected to the internet, you need to make sure that you download or shut off Windows Defender, so it allows you to install the new software without trying to prevent it from being installed.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
The other option is I've installed it where both Windows Defender and Windows Essentials coexisted with other virus programs. But I usually have found that Windows Defender and Windows Essentials made my system slower versus the other products.
Mm. Okay. So is AVG, did you say AVG?
Yeah, it's Alvin Victor George.
Yeah, AVG.
Or Avast, A-V-A-S-T. Or malware bytes, malware, MALWAREBYTES. All those programs have been out for a very long time, and they work well at what they do.
Okay, better than Microsoft Essentials.
Like I said, I look more at performance as well as how well it's doing it, and
okay.
I've had performance issues with Microsoft's products trying to take care of those things.
Mm-hmm. There we go. Good luck, Daddy. Thank you. Helen in La Crosse. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I just called to tell you what LeapFrog is.
Great.
It's computerized learning toys for children. My daughter was a producer for them some years ago, so I'm really not up on what they're currently making. But that's what it is. It's in the greater San Francisco area.
Hmm.
Oh, all right.
And well, I thought it was great when, you know, years ago when she worked for them.
Oh, thank you for calling. Well, we can take a look at that at some point.
Yeah, I can tell you when you type in LeapFrog in Facebook, you don't exactly get toys.
No, LeapFrog, if you put LeapFrog, yeah.
It's a term that people use about jumping ahead of somebody.
Yeah, so you get that all the time.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks,
Ellen. And Marlene in Wauwatosa, it's your turn. Hi, Marlene.
Hi, hello.
Hi.
For the sake of all the other callers waiting to speak with you, I will try to be brief. This call is regarding the earlier call, previous caller, and the El Capitan download.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's been a nightmare for me.
sorry to hear that.
It's just, and we're not alone. And Saturday, after many hours with technicians across the country mm-hmm. and various appointments at the Genius Bar mm-hmm. at Mayfair, mm-hmm. I literally dumped everything and fixed it. I know. I came back an hour later after going to get a cup of coffee, mm-hmm. and they didn't fix anything, but they did acknowledge that there was a problem, mm-hmm. and okay. there wasn't anybody there who could work on it. Mm-hmm. So that, I think, is the problem also. There isn't anybody, and I have the highest respect for the Genius Bar people. Mm-hmm. I just learned so much. Not this time around. There isn't anybody there. So my computer, as well as my printer in this mm-hmm. case, is still at Apple. And
so can you share yeah. with when you applied the update, did the system stop working?
Oh, what happened is my computer was only 2 years old, my MacBook mm-hmm. Pro, yep. And the second replacement needed a hard drive. Mm-hmm. And when they replaced the hard drive, they installed the El Capitan. Mm-hmm. And there's data that's missing, even though I had this fancy Lacy external mm-hmm. hard drive and was right. religious in my backup. Mm-hmm. I still am missing things. Their solution, one of the times I was at the Genius Bar mm-hmm. was to revert back to the older version. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you've got to be kidding me. You know, and they couldn't even guarantee all of the... They don't know what happened to all of the information mm-hmm. that clearly I backed up, mm-hmm. but is not there.
Right.
And that's when I just went to get a cup of coffee. And when they came back, they had tried my printer, which they said was a problem, you know, other than... And it worked fine on another unit. Mm-hmm. And I'm just saying, you know, I could go on and on and on and on. Don't be persistent. And the problem is also they don't know. I really think
right.
they don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
and like I said, I've had this happen to me before. And then when I did additional research, it said, you know, 250,000 users that Apple didn't want, you know, people to know about had a problem with one of their updates. So it does happen, and it's unfortunate. And you know, to hear that your backups are affected is even more disturbing, because you really rely on Time Machine. Because
yeah,
I mean, Time Machine in and of itself is awesome on a Mac, because it really, you know, how quickly and how stealthily, you know, it works, and it does it well. But when you hear the backups are affected, that's disturbing.
Very disturbing. Marlene, thank you for calling. I'm sorry for those problems, for mm-hmm. sure. Patrick in Green Bay, you have a question.
So me? Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, I don't know your name.
Peter and Larry.
And Larry, okay. What did you think of the Windows 10 update?
I've actually been using it for probably about 2 months.
Don't you think it was seamless?
Yeah, as far as the update, I think it worked well.
I think it's the best thing Microsoft has ever done.
there's some changes I don't exactly agree with how they try to accomplish certain components.
Well, that I get too.
But, you know, and that's happened with pretty much every operating system they've done. So, you know, certain things, it's just another way of how to get to it or figure out where it is. But in terms of, you know, memory management, it's they've always tried to improve. Not every single version of Windows improved it, but it appears they've gotten things pretty good speed-wise on the same hardware that works for, like, a Windows 7 machine.
Yeah.
Windows 10 works well on that. You have to be careful with, not all software is fully compatible. So
That's what I was just saying that to a guy in the store the other
yep.
day, and we were talking about it.
Yeah, because we've seen that.
You know, Adobe's freaking out on it, mm-hmm. and, you know, everything's kind of freaking out on it mm-hmm. because it's so advanced.
Yeah. Yep. And, so you got to make sure if there's certain programs that you're really using that they are compatible with Windows 10.
Yeah.
Because or to find the version that you need to be compatible with Windows 10. Now they allow you to run it in like compatibility modes and things like that, but that doesn't always work.
There's a couple of websites that I would like to get onto and do things that I have to do, you know, financially, whatever, and they don't communicate well at all. The other thing that I wanted to say to you is I love the fact that you are pushing Malwarebytes, because Malwarebytes is a wonderful program.
It does work well.
It does. Thank you.
And it was recommended by a caller, I'm going to say probably 15 years ago, Larry.
Yeah, somebody called in and recommended it.
Yep.
That's right. And that's kind of always a good thing. One of the nice things about the show is
that's why we're here,
today
is
it's
to
happened.
Share.
Yeah, today it's happened a few times. Thanks, Patrick, for calling. Appreciate it. We are visiting today with Peter Green, computer consultant with Infostar.com. And we're going to take a quick look at the news and weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the IdeasNet. But you'll be able to join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Or go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post your questions there. Back right after the news. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along today as we visit with Peter Green of Infostar.com. He's an independent computer consultant about your computer and your software and mine. I'm Larry Mueller. And we have every line filled, and we've got a lot of questions online, but this time of the program, Pete always has a great list of what we call a top 10 list of great sites to visit. And what have you got for us today, Pete?
Well, I guess recently there was your chapter day had a book reading called Just Mercy. Well, I took the opportunity to read the book, and it was very enlightening, and it's footnoted with a lot of resources, so I've put them up there to make it easy for people to enjoy them. So the first, if you go to Infostar.com, top left, you click on current, or if you go to the top 10 archives and scroll down to today's date, which, by the way, Pearl Harbor Day, if people aren't aware of that, that's pretty amazing or important too. EJI.org. It's a private organization that provides legal representation to indigent defendants and prisoners who have been denied fair and just treatment in the legal system. And that was founded by the author of that book. Number two is BJS.gov, which is the Bureau of Justice Statistics, which in and of itself is there's just lots there. Number three is the InnocenceProject.org. And that's for National Litigation and Public Policy Organization, dedicated to exonerating wrongfully convicted individuals through DNA testing and so forth. Number four is FAS.org, which is an organization that works to provide science-based analysis of catastrophic threats to national and international security and to develop policy solutions to reduce these threats. Number five is the sentencingproject.org. Its goal is to work for a fair and effective U.S. criminal justice system, promoting sentencing policies and so forth. Number six is ncjrs.gov, federally funded resource offering justice and drug-related information to support research policy and program development worldwide. Number seven is the deathpenaltyinfo.org, and it's about the death penalty and anything related to that, as well as they put a link up there to their state-by-state database of what the death penalty is for each state. Number eight is treatmentadvocacycenter.org. That's a mouthful. And that's a national nonprofit organization to try and eliminate barriers to the timely and effective treatment of severe mental illness. Number nine is AmericanProgress.org, and that's an independent policy institute dedicated to improving the lives of all Americans through progressive ideas and more. And number 10 is a technology resource. And before I tell you about it, I want you to think about where were we when we did things like all we did was fax. You had to have a fax. And now, you know, faxing is almost gone. And then email came along. And now, you know, we're emailing each other like crazy. And then you go to a website and you could actually get chat assistance for being helped. So, you know, you're either a consumer or you're working and you're helping your customers. So there's a resource out there, and I'm not saying this is the only one, but where our society and our technology is evolving with resources like Facebook, Twitter, they're all communication tools, how we communicate with each other and how to get through and how to stay in touch and how to exchange information and how to exchange ideas and how to exchange thought processes and moving forward in different things. So this application is called Glip, and it's spelled GLIP.com. And basically, it puts a lot of those things all together in one environment. So for you to communicate better with a customer or your clients or your friends, it allows you to email, it allows you to chat. It allows you to share pictures, allows you to share documents, and it's all under one roof. So you don't have to go from one thing to the other, but you're in there, and it makes it easier to communicate. And that's all about what the internet is communicating, and these other, you know, social media things that we use to communicate. So I'm just pointing out that it's not just email anymore. There's other things out there that you can leverage and take advantage of, and this is just one way to do that. And I'm not endorsing it. I'm just saying it's something
worth
interesting and worth looking at.
And all that's up on your page, Infostar.com.
Yep.
Upper left. Dale in La Crosse has a question for you, so let's go there. Hi, Dale.
Good morning. I'm currently trying to work with my Excel spreadsheet. When I enter information on one cell, the second cell, and after the second cell, it comes up with a message that the system's not responding, and then the box comes up, we're sorry, Excel has run into an error that's preventing it from working correctly. You need to close as a result. Would you like a repair? I try repair. That doesn't help. I then tried to use Windows and getting the same type of treatment.
Have you tried anything to work on clearing or cleaning out your system registry?
No.
Okay. You might want to try doing that, and a way to do that is using a program called CCleaner.
CCleaner?
Yep, C and then CLEANER, and it's made by a company called Piriforms, P-I-R-I, Forms. So you can do search on that, but you know that might be one thing that you would want to try to do is see if you can clean up your system registry.
Okay.
So it's error free.
All right.
Once you get that, if the problem still persists, I would probably try two things. One is to see if there's an update for the software and apply that. If there isn't an update, I would probably uninstall it, and after uninstalling it, I would reboot the machine and then bring it up again and then try to reinstall the application, reinstall Excel and
there
see if that works.
Good luck.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, thanks for calling. Bob in Sparta, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hey, thanks for taking a call. Yeah, I got a laptop at Toshiba. I think it's an A660. I've had it for a while now. I think it's running Windows 7 version still. They keep asking me to put in 10 there, but I haven't got to it yet. But probably a year, 2 years ago almost, my new folder function just stopped working. You click on it, nothing happens. You ask for one, nothing happens there. So I basically have an empty folder that I just copy over whenever I need to create a new folder there as a workaround.
In other words, when you try to actually create a new folder, it won't allow you to do that.
I get nothing.
What you may want to do is, I'm trying, you know, I should almost have like a cheat sheet, Larry, because I try to remember how to do all these things. There is what you should do is probably you could do a Google search because I don't want to tell you the wrong way to type this in. And actually, they usually have like a little tutorial how to do it. But what you should do is run a file checker on your Windows system so that it looks to confirm that all the Windows files are intact and correct. Because
am I finding that on Google search?
Yeah, Google or Bing or whatever you use for Yahoo search and so forth.
Well, I'm just looking for a file checker for what I'm searching.
Yeah, for your Windows operating system. Because that's inherent or part of the OS that should work. And if you can't create a new folder on your computer in any directory, that's a problem. And it's a problem with the operating system.
Okay. Has to be.
Yeah. And you don't want to upgrade an operating system that would have a problem like that because that could get carried forward. That may not necessarily get fixed. So you want to fix it before you do anything else to the operating system.
There you go. Good luck. Thanks for calling. Bill in Kewaunee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Real quick question, and it concerns Tor browser and VPN, virtual private network, and your thought, how effective are they? I should say I travel quite a bit internationally. I find myself in hotel rooms having to log on there. But even more than that, here I am in Kewaunee, rural area. I'm ordering all the time offline. It's great. You know, the post office brings me what I want. Mm-hmm. But, again, there's, how effective would they be in protecting me?
Well, a virtual private network is basically like having a tunnel through the system. So it's, you know, connecting you to your endpoint for that VPN. So they're effective, and they're used as business tools to connect, you know, one business site to another business site for the company, or they're used to connect a customer to a business site or business partners online. So it's something that's been out there for quite a while, and they're still effectively used. And they're secured. It's like a secured tunnel. It's a checkpoint to get in and a checkpoint to get out.
There you go. Thanks for calling. And Scott in Wausau, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an older computer with XP on it yet. And when I start it up, it takes a while for Windows to load. And I was just wondering what kind of pointers I could get on that.
Do you do any kind of file maintenance? Do you eliminate, like, temporary internet files? Do you clear the cache?
Yeah, I do that. I get rid of the internet and the temp and the catch on the on the maintenance. And then I also do a defragment once in a while.
And how about as far as cleaning the registry?
That I haven't done.
Okay, you probably should do that. And then do you have a lot of things running in your system tray on your right side? You know, a lot of icons or
well, there are a few, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, I have McAfee and other things in there.
Okay. So, you know, the other thing is just to question whether or not those things need to be there. Now, like McAfee, which is antivirus, I would say yes.
Uh-huh.
But if it's something to, like, make changes to your video screen, I would say no. Mm-hmm. Or if it's something like running an accounting program, unless you use like a bill reminder or something like that for QuickBooks, I would say no, because, you know, it'll come up once you start the program.
Okay.
So the thing that's in the right lower right corner are things that start up that are just kind of like ready for you to, you know, it's sort of like a little head start, but they also eat away at system resources unnecessarily, you know, and slowing you down if you don't really use them that much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Cut them out.
Yep. And the way you do that is you click on start and you type in, why is my memory starting to fail me, Larry?
You need an upgrade.
MSconfig. MS for Microsoft, and then CONFIG, and then hit the enter key. and then click on the Startup tab. And just make note of the ones that are checked. And some you'll probably recognize. Like you said, McAfee will probably be pretty obvious. And then just look at the other ones and see if you can identify what they are. And you can always fix them by putting the check marks back. So just make note of which ones are checked. And you know, it's a little bit of trial and error, but it'll probably might make it a little bit faster.
There you go. Thanks a lot, Scott, for calling. And Steve in Madison, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a program that appeared on my computer, which is a desktop that I use for business, and it's called RegCure Pro. I believe it might be a Microsoft product, but my question is, have you heard of it? Is it legitimate, or is it something I should try to get off my computer?
It's probably something you should try and get off. It sounds like they're probably going to tell you they can scan your system and correct errors or
exactly.
Make it fast. And somehow it got in on your system, and it's going to start bugging you more and more.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yep.
So my fear is if I touch it or do something with it, it's going to, you know, embed itself even more so in the system.
Right, yeah. Some of those can kind of go stealth, and we've talked about a number of these over the years. One thing you might want to do is download something. I don't know if you have Malwarebytes, but Malwarebytes, good program for this, is to download a version of it for your system on another computer and then disconnect your computer from the internet and then install and run Malwarebytes without any of the other programs up and running, and
okay.
and do a scan and see if you can get it off your system that way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Tom in Racine has a question. Hi, Tom.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a nagging problem, and maybe you can help me. I hope you can help me. I try to send a news article from, let's say, Yahoo News or USA Today. Via email rather than use Twitter or Facebook or the other ones. And I always get a message that says, well, it goes into Outlook Express, I guess. And I always get a message that says it can't be sent. And I don't know why I can't send it.
Via email?
Yeah, via email by, let's say, Outlook Express. They send me, they have me in a Hotmail email address that I never use, but that's the one that they use for my email address.
Well, it sounds to me like what's going on is there's like a little bit of confusion on your system between trying to get something sent out with Outlook Express, and yet it's trying to identify it with what you're saying is Hotmail. So there might be some kind of identity change that you might need to make in your Outlook, if you're using Outlook Express, in your Outlook Express settings or your setup. If you're trying to send an article, if it's a web page, you know, the easiest way would be, and it's like not subscriber-based, so I'll just go through some examples. If it's not subscriber-based and it's really just like a link to an online article, the easiest way is to send a copy of the link. So you would click up in the link box in Windows, you'd right mouse click on it and, you know, say copy and then paste it into an email. That'd be the easiest way. Second easiest way would be if you're on the article and it has an email link for you to click on, and you click on that and send it through their means of pushing it to somebody else's email address. But if you have email set up on your system and there's some confusion in terms of identity, you know, and like what you mentioned, Hotmail and Outlook Express, those are two different email systems. Hotmail is web-based, and Outlook Express is client or, you know, desktop software-based. So they're two different email ways of trying to get it out there, and there might be some confusion with the setup. The other issue would be if it's subscriber-based article that you're looking at. In other words, you have to subscribe to, and I don't know if this, I'm just throwing it out there, but let's say in order to do this with the New York Times article, you subscribe to the New York Times and then you're reading it online, you would have to copy and paste that article into an email and then send it, because sending that article may or may with a link, and I'm not positive about this, mm-hmm. but if you were to send it from the New York Times, they might have it set up to send it out via email, or they you could link to it and they may allow it to go out, but I'm not positive. So
yeah.
you know, there's some issues with
different ways
dealing
to...
with subscriber-based articles. Well,
thanks for calling, Tom. James emailed and wondered about wondered if he should update or upgrade to Windows 10 from Windows 7. What's your critique of Windows 10, and how much longer will it be free?
Well, they said a year's time. I'm not sure I don't remember the exact release date, but it was probably within the last three, four months.
Yeah.
And they've been pushing it out there, and in some cases I've seen it where they just say, hey, you're going to be a Windows 10 system, whether you like it or not, because your system can take it. you know, and like I mentioned earlier, making sure you check compatibility on programs that you're used to using. So programs like, you know, Microsoft Office, you're not going to have a problem with. Programs like QuickBooks, depends on the version, you may or may have a problem with it. Other accounting systems may or may, you know, you have to run a, you can run a compatibility test. Microsoft has the tools to check and see if the software should run on Windows 10. And same thing with printers. You can do your homework on it. You just take the model of the printer that you're using. So if it's a Canon, HP, Epson, you know, whoever is the manufacturer, take the model and, you know, go to either the manufacturer's website or do a search and see if that model supports Windows 10 and if the drivers are available. The best thing to do is do your homework and make sure you have the drivers available, downloaded, before you do the install rather than, you know, having them later.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned printers, and I was just thinking of you can get a pretty good printer these days for not a whole lot of money.
Yeah, where the printer companies make their money is the annuity of the toner. It's always been that way.
Yeah.
And I still, to this day, I get calls for people wanting to sell me laser, you know, toner for the printers that I use at work. And, you know, they're astronomical because I don't like spend a lot of money on them. So I just go online and find the best prices.
Yeah, it's like the old, it reminds me of Polaroid cameras.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Polaroids were not all that expensive, but the film
is the annuity.
The film was the annuity.
Yep.
Pete, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Always great.
Always great. Peter Green, computer consultant, has Infostar.com, and he visits with us pretty regularly to help with your personal computer problems. I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody, but that is pretty much always the case when Pete's with us. Coming up again, just to mention, at 2 o'clock, they'll be talking about some of the dangers of football, and what you know about it depends on your economic status. Kathleen Dunn looks at that. And then tomorrow on this show at 11, we're going to find out how to make those visits to the vet a whole lot easier for you and your pets. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.